Welcome to another episode of the Friends Are Forming Animation Forum, featuring all of us.
Yes.
Welcome back, computer.
Reunited.
Feels good.
Yeah.
I feel there's so much more organization to the show.
I know.
Things
you
just
look
go
better.
Boom, boom, boom.
You're dressed like a normal human being again.
Thank you.
You were wearing muumuus for a few weeks there. I was worrying about you.
Muumuus are comfortable, but they get a little stanky.
Oh, yeah. You smelled pretty bad.
Yeah.
Pretty
computer, bad. I got to say, again, I know I went into this before, but I am sorry. And it's so good to have you back.
Yeah.
And we look forward to many more years of you summoning, you organizing, you being you.
And you know what, Joel? Maybe what we should do is we should give Computer just some vacation time every year.
I think that is definitely...
That might keep him out. We're sorry, Computer, that we didn't think about that before we started this. But this was a new endeavor for all of us.
What's that, boy? Oh, he also said update RAM.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to do that.
We can do that.
All right.
So, Alan and I were talking with Computer over the week.
Yes.
And by talking, I mean literally talking.
Yeah.
We were talking with Computer over the week, and Computer brought up... He reminded us of something we said a long time ago.
Yeah.
Perhaps we would try doing Skype interviews.
That's right.
So Computer said, you know, guys, I'm rested. I mean, this is all in ones and zeros.
Right.
That was printed out on an old printer that had the little perforated edges.
Yeah, we had to take it to MIT to get it translated.
Just ones and zeros for about 4 days.
Yeah.
We decoded it.
Well, MIT decoded it for us. Yeah.
It said, let's try Skype.
Yeah.
I'm up for it.
Yeah.
I have the energy. I feel refreshed. And then it went into something about Zaxxon, which
I don't know what that game is that we really play. Yeah.
And then it said, let's do it. And I bet in its computer mind, it kind of sounded like, let's do it. Computer, is that right? Would that be a good voice for you? No. Okay. You said you sound more like Jodie Foster.
From Nell? Whoa.
Oh, no, he said from Dell.
Oh.
I think there's...
Delaware. All right. Is that where Jodie Foster's from?
I think it's just a Jodie Foster.
Oh.
We're going to try this today.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Computer, link us up.
Wait.
Well, yeah.
Before he links us up, shouldn't we tell the good people who are listening who we're going to have on the program today?
Alan, let's run down. Who's going to be on?
That's what I just said.
Okay.
Run it down.
Alan,
your fucking show anyway.
Alan, who is going to be our Skype guinea pig? Let us know.
J.J. Settlemeyer.
That's right. From such production companies as the J.J. Settlemeyer Production Company.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, Computer, do what you need to do. Do your voodoo. We're ready.
I think we're linked.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Everyone, J.J. Settlemeyer.
Yeah.
Skype guinea pig. J.J., feel free to clap for yourself.
Yeah.
He's messing with us.
Sorry.
That was Skype hilarity. So welcome.
Thank you.
How are you on this fine
day?
Thank
you very much. Oh, just swell. It's a little warm because the air conditioner isn't on in the studio right now, but I won't be moving around a whole lot, but it's been a lovely day. Lovely day.
Weird day, huh? Tornado warnings.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting. It's pretty windy out there, but other than that, I'm not too worried about it.
Right. Yeah. Alan, are you worried?
I'm always worried about everything.
Yeah.
You know that.
He's never content with just being sitting.
No.
So we're very happy to have you here on our podcast, as you know, because I'm sure you're a giant fan of it. It's a comedy podcast about animation.
Giant.
Thank you. Thank you. Basically, we want to know about you. Maybe how you use animation, how you got into the animated arts. Things you like about animation.
And why do you want to know about me?
This is a great question. We are, it's a survey. A global...
Think of it as the census for animators.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just global questioning about a topic. Word has it that you have worked in animation. You've done things. People may have heard of some of the things you've done. Beavis and Butthead, TV Funhouse,
yeah.
The ambiguously gay duo, Tech Jansen, a U.S. bank commercial featuring a pig.
Ah, true.
Yeah.
And did some stuff for Psych, the TV show, Big Adventures of Little Gus and Sean. And it's the commercials. I think we're known for the broadcast stuff we've done, but it's the commercials that I really enjoy. And that's what we opened the studio. It's going to be 20 years in July.
Wow, that's great. That deserves applause.
Yeah, we're applauding because that's hard in these days.
Yeah, my wife Patrice and I run the studio together, and it was opened to really do commercials and work with artists and designers and cartoonists who aren't known for doing animation, but whose style could lend a kind of fresh look to the stuff you see on television. But that's I think I would call that the most fun, because longer form stuff, you have to reach a structure and a foundation because it's done in quantity. And, with commercials, you're dealing with 15 or 30 seconds worth of stuff. So you really get to try techniques and tasty sort of little experiments that you really can't afford to do in longer form stuff. So I love the commercials and print, you know, and drawing.
What is your background?
My background is really drawing and art and comic books. And I mean, I was gonna go to, after I went to school, I went to school in Madison, University of Wisconsin in Madison. And when I was through with school, I was either going to go to the West Coast for animation or New York for comics. And I came to New York because I knew New York better and had relatives here, was very familiar with it, had no idea there was animation in New York.
Really?
And when I got here, yeah, I knew nothing about the history of animation. I just thought it was all done in California, which most, lay people. And then decided to come to New York, moved to New York, found out what was going on in comic books, which was pretty dead in the late 70s in America. I mean, comic books were basically Marvel and DC, and it was just, established characters, no risks. Marvel wasn't doing really cool stuff anymore. And I said, oops, and just started taking my portfolio around to anyone that would look at it. And then found out there was animation going on in New York. And by 1980, I met this guy, Tony Eastman, who was kind of this hub of independent and professional animation. And we struck up a friendship, and then I started assisting him on stuff he had done.
What kind of work was he doing?
It was primarily commercial stuff. And then he heard about a job at a studio called Perpetual Motion Pictures, which was doing all the Berenstain Bears stuff. Wow. And they were gearing up for they did half hour specials and things like that. And, I found that they were interviewing people for their new project, which was Strawberry Shortcake in Big Apple City.
I love Strawberry Shortcake. Alan is always poking fun at the fact I collect the coloring books.
He has all the utensils and the dishware.
I have the potpourri of all the characters when you mix them together. The toys, nice. The toys smelled.
Yes, they did in more ways than one.
Yeah, you don't want they're not good collector's items because that smell does not remain fresh over the years.
No.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You go on eBay, you may find that's not the case.
But I did find that my Berenstain Bears collectibles do smell better with time. I don't know why.
They're saltier, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just curious, you're talking about comics. What is your favorite non-stand-up, non-improv comic, meaning comic books, hero, superhero or otherwise?
It's usually not the characters. It's usually the artists. I mean, now there are people like Mike Allred and Chris Ware,
yeah,
and a guy named Nathan Fox, who are not just comic book illustrators, but illustrators and designers. That's kind of the way it seems like it's gone. Although, I mean, I still love Neil Adams. And I'm actually working with him now on something, which is fantastic. I mean, he's like amazing. I look at his designs and his drawings, and it just blows my head off. It's just
You're doing an animated project.
We're working on an animatic project for test that hopefully will go. We'll see.
Nice.
But I've known Neil for a few years, and I'm always kind of like writing that line between being collaborating with him and just being a shameless fanboy.
Yeah.
Because stuff, it just, I mean, and again, the people I've gotten to work with, it makes my head reel. So it's the artists, the designers, the cartoonists, it's just great to work with people like that.
Would you say that New York City allows you to work with people like that? You don't necessarily have to be in other places, or what would you recommend?
New York's great because there are a lot of, publishing is still in New York. Yeah. And so that kind of helps. But I'd say the past 10 years, it doesn't matter where you are anymore.
Right, because of the computers.
Yeah, I mean, we did a whole campaign of commercials with this Italian illustrator. His name's Shout.
That's not an Italian word, though. That's not really an Italian.
Yeah, how would he pronounce that?
Go figure. Have no idea. But we haven't met. We've never met. But the work was fantastic, and we just send things back and forth, and then the animators and the assistants that I work with, understand how they have to be nimble to get into whatever style that they're working in.
I want to get back to something you said. You mentioned Chris Ware.
Mentioned him over there. What?
Yeah, he's over there. We're going to put him over there. Did you know that Chris Ware and I grew up in the exact same town?
In Oak Park? No, he lives in Oak Park. Where did you guys grow up?
Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, really?
Now, here's the more interesting thing about what I just said. His style, all of his graphic novels is because of Omaha, Nebraska.
And why is that?
Is it the barren...
Not the barrenness. There's a twinge of the isolation. If you look at a top view of Nebraska, it is a multitude of different comics panels in the way that they arrange the farms.
Those just squares,
circles, crop circles. Weird borders. I'm going to throw this out there. It's probably right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it's right. And Chris Ware would agree with me. If you read his comics, it's actually a topographical view of all of Nebraska.
Is this something you've discussed with him, or is this something you've read that he's discussed, or?
All the times that we've gotten together.
I think this is just pure speculation.
We've never discussed it.
Total bullshit.
It's weird.
I don't think he knows it. I don't think he actually knows Chris Ware. I think he's making shit up.
No, but we are from the same.
Well, that may be. I'm just saying.
No, but I can understand why that kind of barren isolation, outside of also probably being the type of person that just likes to, or I don't know if he likes to, an observer. I see that even though a lot of his stuff takes place in Chicago now,
right?
It seems to fit well. And he also, you can tell he's also got an incredible grasp of comic book heritage and history.
Yes.
I mean, his stuff really, really does a heavy nod to the stuff of the teens and the 20s in terms of comic strips. And even those... Even those Johnson Smith catalogs that you used to see advertised, on the inside front cover. I mean, he's completely taken it and made it his own thing, which is just great.
I was going to ask if you've been following or excited about the sort of surge that's been happening in independent comics.
You guys, do you know Raw magazine?
I've seen it. Yeah.
Art Spiegelman's thing.
Yeah. Okay.
I think he really helped launch comics into kind of like a graphic arts form, an acknowledged and recognized graphic arts form. And after that, I mean, if you look at everything that's happened with comics and animation and so forth past 15, 20 years, it's all because all of us who grew up with it are now, you know, in a position to filter it into, whether it's advertising, whether it's publishing, whether it's whether if you're an art director for New York Times magazine and you're looking for something that's going to, you know, make a statement graphically, using something like that is completely, totally possible now. So comics and graphic arts and, you know, they call comics graphic novels now.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I don't know that identity is any different. Oh, I love what's happening, and it's great for all areas.
You don't think it's going at all too far? Ghost Rider the movie.
Well, yeah, but that shit's always going to happen. I mean, that's going too far because it sucked. Yeah. But the other stuff happening. I mean, when you got people doing things. I mean, look, I love the Spider-Man movies. I love. Kick-Ass.
Right.
There's some great stuff. Watchmen was interesting.
Yeah.
But it also has so much to do about technology. God, the stuff you can do now with when you want to make somebody fly, you don't have to do this easy compositing and make sure it takes place at night so you can hide a multitude of sins and so forth. doesn't mean there's any less shitty stuff out there. It just means that now there's a more of a variety of potential for shit to happen. And the good stuff always rises to the top.
Like poop that floats.
Yeah. I've just noticed that in going around and speaking to students at different art schools around the New England area. It seems to me that there are a lot more kids doing comics than there used to be. It wasn't as prevalent in the art schools even just 10 years ago. And now it's
part of the curriculum. And it's also, it used to be that, you know, if you were into something, and it's true with movies too. If you were really into something, you had to track it down. Now everything's available.
Yeah.
And it's very, I mean, as a teacher and being involved in education, you also must get frustrated by the fact that there's all this stuff available, but there's not a really good grasp of film history and all that. It kills me.
And it's just more shit you have to learn as a teacher.
Yeah.
Screw that.
Yeah. And they don't pay for you to go to workshops and keep up on all of it. One thing we're not seeing as technology starts advancing is everyone's skill set also has to expand and grow. And so really in our business we should be paid much more for what we do.
It all stays the same. It just always seems to stay the same. It doesn't seem to change that much.
Now, before you're talking about technology, and I'm just curious, what are some of your favorite techniques of animation?
I like whatever works. And because we don't have a style, even though people know us from the SNL type stuff, which seems like a zillion years ago now, I just like animation. And you may look at our stuff and say in some cases, oh, well, you know, you like to dwell in classic 2D realm. I do like that. I enjoy working in that realm, but, you know, any one spot which may look conventional probably utilizes everything from scan drawings to Flash to After Effects to Toons to whatever. And there's never any set formula that I use to, you know, translate the concept into animation. So I don't really have a favorite. What I don't enjoy is seeing something where there's been no thought put into the thing. Like you guys must know, with your students, I mean, anime is very popular.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you'll look at portfolios or you'll look at people drawing in a style. And it's a rough, it's a really tough thing to deal with because, you know, anime is nothing more than another technique or approach to doing animation. A lot of kids learn to draw from anime or manga.
Yes.
And they don't, I don't know that they fully grasp the baggage that comes with the graphic style. So they inadvertently start to present a confusing message by utilizing a graphic technique that, you know, and sometimes it's funny, but it wasn't supposed to be funny.
No, no.
And we're not talking about conscious parody or satire here. No. We're talking about trying desperately to understand that your audience has stuff that they bring along, you know, when they're looking at something. So that's the thing that I find very frustrating and drives me up a wall. Or some of this, you know, we're talking about technology changing quickly and all this, but a while ago when it was really changing quickly, anything that was done in CG or 3D was very stimulating and exciting because it was always different. It was always getting closer to reality, which was perceived as being better. But it's really not better because there are a lot of filmmakers who and producers who use 3D animation or 3D technology to get closer to reality, and you start losing the artists, you know. You got somebody like Brad Bird who gets it and he swings it around and he makes it his own thing and everything. But so much of the stuff just starts looking like the same old thing, or it looks so close to reality and they try to do these human characters and they get themselves backed into a corner.
Yeah, like with Avatar and...
Well, Avatar and even something like Shrek, where you've got, you know, the human characters that can't possibly live up to what it is that they're trying to live up to by getting so close to reality. Avatar's in its own kind of, you know, realm. It's a good example of something that's so visually stimulating that you start to forget that the script is really dumb.
Yeah.
And it's like Matrix, too.
A magic trick.
Yeah. It's you're, wow, look at this. And wow, the great sound and all that. And then it's just, it's a bad comic.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, well, what you're saying about styles, people incorporating other people's styles is something that keeps occurring, especially with anime. And in school, I have so many students who are drawing anime and they're presenting storyboards to me with anime. And what I have told them is if you were looking at doing a self-portrait or looking at your best friend and you were to draw them realistically, would they look like anime? And they usually say no, they wouldn't. And so I make the point very clearly. I try to work with them to get into their own style by drawing from life, except some of them have trumped me in this because they're really into the anime conventions and really into the cosplay, which is a term that I learned from them.
I don't even know what that means.
Dressing up as anime.
Oh, okay.
And they have trumped me because they actually do look like anime now. And so, whatever, feel free, have at it. Draw each other with giant eyes and blue hair.
Now, I sometimes like to animate in an anime style purely because I like the timing. But I love only having to animate on fours.
And the lip sync's good, too.
And the lip sync is so much easier. Yeah. But I've seen the same thing over the last few months going around talking to students. A lot of the kids are heavily, heavily influenced by anime, but that's what they grew up watching on television.
Yeah, and we grew up watching stuff that influenced us too. And there is a lot of good stuff to be influenced by with anime.
Right.
But until, and I say until because things can change when you've got an entire culture bringing something in with their own baggage attached to it. And it can change.
Yeah.
But until it does, if they want to make films and they want to tell stories and reach their project's potential, they've got to understand this baggage thing that goes along with it. It is interesting talking to artists and finding out who their influences are.
Who were you influenced by?
I was influenced by Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So when I actually got to work with Don Martin from Mad Magazine, that was like a trip, a total, it just, ugh. And then comic book illustrators like Neil Adams, like Alex Raymond, who did Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up reading my dad's comic books. My dad was this rare individual who had a mom who didn't dump his comics. So I grew up reading comic books from the late 30s, early 40s. Wow. And so I was exposed to a lot of illustrators and cartoonists that a lot of my friends didn't know. But and Winsor McCay.
Yeah.
But a lot of the cartoonists that worked in magazines like Mad, and I worked for and with R.O. Bleckman for quite a few years.
Oh.
And people don't really think of him as an illustrator, but he's an incredible designer, cartoonist, illustrator. He's really an artist. And that minimal style that he has is, it's really pretty remarkable. So I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm completely all over the place.
Well, you started your own studio.
Yeah, I was about to ask that same question.
Al and I are usually on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
And how'd
you do that?
What's your secret?
Well, first of all, I have an incredible wife and business partner who dwells on the side of the brain that I usually don't venture into.
Yes.
Mm, the hypothalamus?
I'm without one of those.
Okay.
Very, very responsible, very pragmatic, and but totally understands the creative point of view, creative world. She was an actress, and I couldn't have done this, certainly wouldn't have done it the same way without her.
Alan's making a checklist. So
yeah.
Very brilliant wife.
Yeah, I got to find a brilliant wife first.
Yeah, if you can get you one of those, man, it's a really good thing. But after working up in studios and then actually working at the Ink Tank, when I started working in R.O. Bleckman's The Ink Tank, I came in as an assistant animator. But after being there about maybe a couple months, he made me his producer.
Wow.
And he did that because even though I was assistant animating and animating, I would find myself in the meetings with whether it was the network or advertising agencies, and he's very soft-spoken and I have no problem speaking up, and we made a really good team, and he just said, you know, I want you to be my producer, which I just was horrified at.
Yeah.
Because then I wasn't going to draw anymore.
Right.
But Patrice said, no, no, no. No, this is a good thing. And, you know, she was right. I mean, I would have liked to have had more time cutting my teeth with more animation and really working that world. But this allowed me to be involved with everything, to learn how the business works, to learn how a studio can be run. But, you know, that from 84 to when I left in 90, it really taught me everything I needed to know about running a studio. On top of that, I was able to have forged a reputation as not only a producer, but as a director and someone with a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we opened our studio, it was just natural progression of things. The other thing that allowed me to open the studio was when I went to school in Madison, I worked in a Greek restaurant.
Just like an animation studio.
It really is. It took me a few years to realize it, but it really taught me anything I didn't learn at the Ink Tank, I had in my DNA from working at that restaurant, because you dealt with clients or customers.
Yeah.
Dealt with suppliers, you dealt with the financial aspect of it, and I'd gone from a busboy to an assistant manager, so it was great. But that's what kind of really set it up. And when we opened the studio 20 years ago, it was also a time when animation was really pushing hard to shed its reputation as just being for kids, because MTV had really started to produce some interesting stuff just with their 10-second IDs.
Right.
And that was starting to filter into commercials. And so there was a lot of neat stuff, you know, starting to happen. So the timing, you know, it was very good timing too. And we've always stayed small. We've always stayed religiously small.
How big are you right now?
We're four people.
Oh, wow.
It's a personal question.
Well.
Oh. Yeah. Ask me in another 7 minutes.
Okay, all right.
We got up to 50 people with Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
And that was what we didn't want from the studio. And luckily that happened early in our career. So it was good that it happened early because it kind of woke us up. And we started getting big again with Saturday Night Live stuff. And we pulled out of there. We got up to about 25 people. And that's just too big. Yeah. For the longest time, we were like cruising with about 8 people. But we always bring on freelancers and, you know, expand and contract for whatever the workflow is like. But staying small has saved our ass in so many different ways, because if you start getting in bed with either too big a project or you don't keep tabs on your growth, you start to support the studio in a way that doesn't end up helping you be able to be flexible for good work, you know?
When you started it, how did you get the work that afforded you the opportunity to start your own studio?
Well, we'd always saved our money.
Mm-hmm.
We opened the studio. We had a receptionist and Patrice and I, and I just on the first day started making phone calls. There were people that I had worked with that I had mentioned that I was going to be, you know, opening my own place, but they weren't going to, but they, none of them said, okay, well, you know, when you do, let me know and we'll give you some work. It was, there was no guarantee when we opened the studio that we were going to have work. But I did have a good reputation, and I knew that all I had to do was just start calling people and contacting people and spreading the word. And that's what did it. And it really took off from the beginning pretty well.
Has your role changed over the years? I'm assuming you're producer and director.
Yeah. What's prevented it from changing that much is staying small. And the one thing that reminded us of that was Beavis, because...
But not Butthead?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're Beavis on first, had that quality.
First theme, that was a great thing to do. It was a great thing to be a part of, but it was not for us in the long run. Mm. It was just too big. Well, do you guys know the studio Colossal Pictures?
Yeah.
They were doomed from the start.
Yeah.
With their name.
Really great work. And they just started getting bigger and they started getting into aspects of not just animation, but merchandise. And look, if that's what you are working towards, great. But it seemed like what happened is all these opportunities presented themselves and they wanted to grab everything.
And they just took too much on.
Yeah. And I think it seems like the same sort of thing happened with Wild Brain, you know, again, fantastic work.
Yeah.
Well, they were an offshoot of Colossal.
That's right.
I have to say Curious has stayed at a large size, but Curious sounds like they were founded to be a large size.
And also their name implies that they're just more inquisitive.
Yeah, they want to try more things.
They'll try more things. They have bigger interests. here's a question. I saw on the Ottawa International Animation Festival newsletter that you are doing the Signal film for the 2010 festival.
Why do they call it Signal film?
It's to warn the approaching armies that
I think it goes back to Native American days, and it's like a
fire
to call people to the round of the fire campsite.
I was gonna liken it to the bat signal, Batman signal.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah,
I heard it had something to do with Chris Ware in Nebraska.
Oh, I would not doubt that.
No, I know you wouldn't.
No, I'm a believer.
Yes, we were asked, and I'm honored to be doing that. It's Ottawa is the best festival for animation out there. The only one who came close, only other festival I think that came close, and if they continue it, will come close continuously, is the platform.
Yeah. Mm. Is that going to come back?
I've heard it's supposed to be. Mm. It was really, you'd never know that was the first year they had done that festival. It was fantastic. But Ottawa and Chris Robinson is, he's fantastic. You should do a podcast with him.
He's a fan of the show.
Yeah.
At least he clicked us as friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
So, very nice.
We'll say as a fan.
Well, we'll be there this year.
Yeah, we're gonna go as a podcast and interview people and do a live show from Ottawa.
Great.
Yeah. 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 So maybe we'll see you there.
Good. Yeah.
We can talk more about the signal phone. Yeah.
Good.
Well, JJ, it's been a pleasure to have you here on our podcast. Is there either any final words you want to put out there to anyone or me and Alan, or also a website where people can go to look at your work, or both?
Website is www.jjsettlemeyer.com. All sorts of varieties how to spell that. But
we'll put a link up for you.
There you go. You'll put it up.
Yes. Hopefully we spell it right, though.
Okay.
JJ Settlemeyer, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you in the near future.
Okay.
All right. Night. Thank you very much, computer. Please gently turn off Skype. Thank you. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Alan, I have some issues I've been trying to work through.
With the show, or?
Not with the show.
With the guest we just had, or?
Oh, no, JJ, great guy.
All right, yeah. He was awesome.
I felt really good.
I had a really great time chatting with him.
Very informative, good perspective.
Yeah, he's got a lot of lessons. Industry sphere. A lot of lessons to teach us. A lot of lessons. Us. Yeah.
Alan, as you know, have been embracing my childhood more in dealing with my current life now.
Okay.
One thing that I've found that really helps me to do this is the guitar.
Yeah. Dude, the guitar is great for that.
Or the guitar.
It's like therapy.
It is.
It's wooden therapy.
Like holding hands with my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
So what I've been doing.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
It's nice.
What is that?
Why are you?
I'm just gonna stand up and.
Oh.
Just get more comfortable.
Okay. Yeah.
Alan, what I've done is I've written I call them therapy ballads.
Okay.
And this is an experiment, my own type of way of just dealing with some feelings.
Okay.
Can I ask you for something?
Sure. Yeah. Anything, man.
All right. I'm just gonna let fly. I'm gonna let fly a tune.
Okay.
I need for you to diagnose me when I'm done, based on the song.
Oh, I'm not a licensed therapist, but
there we go. And a one, and a two, and a...
He's on, he's always on. My arm, he's on my arm. He's on, he's always on. My little brother, ball of hair. Ball of hair, bits of skin and hair. My little brother, ball of hair. Diagnosis, mitosis didn't work for him. That's how he became my vestigial twin. Oh, we're connected at the wrist. My eternal fraternal cyst. Sometimes I get really pissed. He's on, he's always on. My arm, he's on my arm. He's on, he's always on. My little brother, ball of hair. Ball of hair. Fingernails. Brother, ball of hair. Get him off, cut him off, burn him off of me. Wherever I go, he goes, my freak buddy. Oh, well, I'll never have a date, 'cause we didn't separate. cut this cord, I beg you, fade. He's on, he's always on. My arm, he's on my arm. He's on, he's always on. My little brother, ball of hair. Ball of hair, warty mole and hair. My little brother, ball of hair.
Alan, what do you think? I've never done that for anybody. I feel very vulnerable right now. The look you're giving me, it's making me unsure.
I think you've shared a lot with us today.
What do you think I should do? What am I?
You should shave your arm.
Okay. I think perhaps what you're saying is maybe we all need to burn off a little brother ball of hair that we all carry around with us as baggage.
Yeah. Yeah. I think.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye. I love you. Sir, what is your name?
My name is Hans Gruber. I'm into financial mergers and acquisitions.
What do you think of elevator shafts now?
I've not had a problem with them myself, but I know of some people who have had problems with them. So I'm going to take the stairs whenever possible.
Do you think that watch wristbands need to be made out of stronger material?
Yes, leather just isn't cutting it in these modern times.
Yeah, tell me about it.